Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a very special, loud noises and colorful gunpowder edition of the North American Wrestling Connection. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, we're ready to go. Joining us here tonight are the founding fathers of the North American Wrestling Connection. We have the George Washington of Body Slams, Jason Block.
Hey, how are you doing, guys? How are you doing this evening?
We have the Thomas Jefferson of Turnbuckles VRM.
My knee is in lots of pain right now.
We have the Teddy Roosevelt of Title Holders, DJ.
Speak softly, but keep free of big sticks.
And also the big fat liar of Abraham Lincoln's severed head, Nikki Haman.
I was hoping for the Betsy Ross, at least, of wrestling. The flag bearer of what is pure entertainment and pure wrestling. We'll talk after the show. Good evening, gentlemen.
I feel stupid tonight. I don't know why. Anyways, big, big week in wrestling. We only got an hour to talk about, so let's not waste any time. We'll start off with Night of Champions.
It was not a bad show.
I think it was a pretty decent show.
It was.
Good show, mind you. Let's see here. The first match was the women's title. The first match on my card.
Okay, I was going to say, the first match of the night actually was the SmackDown tag titles.
Right. But I'm going with what's on my card and how we predicted it and how we saw the thing on WWE.com on Friday.
All right.
17.
And we have here Mickey James going over Katie Lee Burchill. Surprise, surprise.
Not really one, no.
No.
All right. And everybody got that right. Me, fourth, Jason Block, and DJ did. So let's all applaud ourselves.
Fine.
Then we predicted the U.S. title. Matt Hardy versus Chavo Guerrero. Matt Hardy went over on that one, shocking me and Jason Block. Orf and DJ took that one. And then we have the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Miz Morrison over Finley and Hornswoggle. Jason Block was the only one to get that one right.
I'll pat myself on the back like Barry O. It would have been really, really stupid to put the belt on Finley and Hornswoggle right now.
Yeah, thank God I got that one wrong.
Yeah. Raw Tag Team title, so this was the two-pointer. Ted DiBiase's partner, and who would win, and damn you, DJ, you got them both.
Nicely done.
I had a feeling.
It was the predictable swerve. Ted DiBiase picked Cody, got Cody Rhodes to be his partner, and Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes are the tag champs.
And Russo is nowhere in sight.
Yeah, I gotta say this about Ted DiBiase Jr. He has some of the worst theme music I've heard in ages.
What's wrong with the money ripoff?
What
was wrong with the money ripoff? That was great.
I agree.
I'd rather hear a remix of the original Ted DiBiase theme. With Ted DiBiase Jr. in saying, "I'm simply priceless." Money, 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 money.
Oh, okay. Then you would be living way too much off of the legacy of his father. I think he's actually creating a legacy on his own. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're right. Intercontinental title. Chris Jericho versus Mystery Man.
Oh,
Now it's my turn to gloat. Who did I say would be in that match?
You did say Kofi Kingston, didn't you?
Yeah. And who did I say would win the match?
Kofi Kingston would.
Yep. I was the only one who got the point.
I wouldn't have gotten that one even if I was on.
Mm-hmm.
I was. Oh, but I was surprised. It was a wonderful match.
Oh, yeah, it was a fantastic match. In the end, Shawn Michaels getting punched in the eyes just for kicks and giggles.
For the record, I want this to be known. On Saturday, I said that whoever was the guy that was chosen for this match would be the one that wins. So, I did not say it was Kofi, but I did say that.
Okay,
right.
Was it on the radio, though?
No, it wasn't.
Therefore, you don't get the point. Sorry.
Come on, can we? We need to have a Richard Carter soundtrack. I'm going to double the points.
Double zero is still zero. You're not helping me.
And who would have thought, too? I actually picked CM Punk to be in this match. And I thought, well, the best he could do was get the Intercontinental title. That would be something that they can
stop right there.
I'm going to stop there.
We'll get into that.
Any further, we will get to that. Just a
right.
little tease.
ECW title match, Mark Henry, Kane versus Big Show. Now we present Nikki Heyman stating a simple fact on any handicap match, on any three-way dance. Nikki?
Any triple threat match will go towards the minority. You have two faces and a heel, the heel wins. Two heels and a face, the face wins. I also want to make one other comment real quick. I don't know who all else got to actually see the show, but did you notice that somebody really screwed up in putting the ECW title on the banners? They doctored a cruiserweight belt and put an ECW logo on it.
I read about that the day after, and that's just bad on WWE's part. They know better.
I'm offended.
That's bad on WWE's part. We could also name this the "You Survived a Michael Hayes Racial Remark, Therefore We're Giving You a Belt" title.
And thus, all of that deserves this.
Woo! Given that Mark Henry's been with WWE for over a decade and never got this high up anywhere, I still give him credit for it. I just want him to stay healthy throughout his title reign so that Evan Bourne or maybe another new face will come along and take it away from him. That's all I'll say about that. What was the next match?
SmackDown title match. Edge versus Batista. Kel Sapriese, I think all of us called La Familia interference.
Pretty much. I mean, let's just say it set up what we'll see later. We'll talk about later on. That's all I'm going to say about that. But as a matter of
this segment.
Yeah.
Edge wins. Then the Raw title match. I think all of us who predicted us deserve this.
Whoa! Kisk.
As well, Triple H retains.
Well, again, we didn't know what was in the creative community, the creative people's heads at that time.
Right.
This was all pre-Monday night. That's all we're going to say.
And now, after that, tally it up. I had four. Fourth had four. That's kind of ironic, doesn't it? Fourth had 4 points.
Makes sense.
Jason Block, you had five.
That's cool. Not bad
but
for first
DJ
time.
Did it again. Getting the two-pointer, getting six, and gets the win. Jason,
like
you might want to cover your ears for this next sound.
Okay.
You can uncover your ears now, Jason.
What the heck was that? Seriously, what was that sound effect?
The bastion of the game show world.
Okay. I don't know what that is, but okay.
Think back to 1990.
Okay, never mind. All right, never mind, never mind. Okay, make it, okay.
DJ wins. That's his third successful defense. And we'll have another round of pick-ems next week for the Victory Road pay-per-view for TNA.
Right.
You guys ready?
Lose that one,
here,
I haven't done TNA in a while.
Monday Night Raw.
And
let's just get started. You know, Jim Ross's introduction, his promo was a really cool promo.
Poignant,
lead-in.
Yeah, it was a perfectly... First of all, looking at it from a structural perspective, that first 25 minutes was the best structured and booked moments of Raw that I have seen on TV in literally years. I'm not going to give everything away just yet, but starting from that speech, because you know when you see Jim Ross in Oklahoma, you're thinking, oh, crap, what's going to happen now? We all know this. Then...
Go ahead, Jason.
And then you have Edge interrupting. And Edge basically going into a promo that was just absolutely out of the park brilliant. Brilliantly acted, brilliantly done. You just wanted... Okay, after he does that, he takes JR... And S has Ryder and Hawkins escort him out of the building. Good stuff. Then Edge basically mocks everything about the WWE. And then...
Actually, he just mocks everything about Raw. No general manager.
No Undertaker.
No
world
title.
Well, this week we took care of the world title. I expected in the weeks to come... there will be a general manager on Raw, and it won't be named Vince McMahon. Hopefully.
You know who I expect it to be named?
Ric Flair?
No.
The JBL.
If you remember back in 2002 when Ric Flair was running Raw, how much of a disaster that turned out to be.
My money's on JBL.
My money's on Matt Stryker, actually.
Yeah, I'm with Jason on this one. It's going to be Stryker.
It's true, we haven't seen him yet. Would he be designated by JBL since he's, well, that comes up later, but...
Yeah, I think something like that, because Stryker will be the heel general manager, yeah. Absolutely. Something to that effect.
We need to finish this amazing first segment, though. Okay, Edge has the clones kick JR out of the building, and then he just tears Raw apart and says, Neener, 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 look at my big and shiny belt. You're never going to see it on this show anymore.
And the look on Batista's face was just priceless.
Haven't seen that look since 2003.
Dave killed, Dave smashed, Dave pugilized.
And he just...
Dave lose shirt.
Dave didn't have a shirt when he came out.
Dave,
I didn't mock it.
And Dave wears women's underpants. I'm sorry I noticed this. I don't mean... okay, look. His pants were hanging too low. And you saw this pinkish, reddish, thong-like device. I'm sorry. It was there.
It was a Christmas gift from Melina. You know that I stole it from her.
I'm sorry?
Woohoo! Needless to say, Edge was brilliantly massacred. I was waiting for the ring steps to fall on him when Dave threw him into those. He didn't eat the announce table completely and was left in a crumpled heap in the middle of the ring. Dave's like, okay, I think I've smashed you enough. Too bad I can't take your title. He goes walking up the ramp.
I don't know, forget it. CM Punk comes out with Ref.
With Case.
And Case.
Now, when I saw that, and I watched Raw with a bunch of friends weekly, and we just absolutely exploded. It was just one of those mark-out sort of moments that you rarely get to see on Raw. And the look on CM Punk's face was priceless. It was like, you know, as the ref, he was like, hurry the F up! Hurry the F up! You know, it was great. It was so brilliantly done.
Him yelling at Orion, shut up and let him ring the bell. I want him to start the bloody match.
I really agree with Jason here. I love the urgency where he was kind of like pointing at the imaginary watch around his wrist. Another thing,
right,
too, that I saw when he was coming down, I thought, oh, crap, here it is. He's going to be the first Money in the Bank winner to actually lose his cash-in. I just kind of thought that originally. But then after, of course, he hit the GTS, it was simple after that, and I agree with Jason. I haven't marked out like this in a long time. I was literally jumping up and down, screaming and yelling, and it was really exciting.
My cell phone exploded when this happened because DJ texted me. A couple of people texted me. I sent a text to Sean Matthews, who, shame on him, was still at work. He called me back and said, I dropped my cell phone when I saw that.
I sent him a text too.
It was beautiful. And he called me when he got home. He didn't get home until almost midnight and watched the whole segment. I could hear it in the background, and him narrating it to me like I had not seen it yet.
And first of all, kudos to the creative team for solving a problem in a way that no one really expected. This was one of those beautiful moments that harken back to the anything could happen on Monday Night Raw or SmackDown sort of days. This was one of those surprise, holy crap sort of moments, and it was just so, it flowed so naturally.
It was such a great moment, too, that for this entire week, I really haven't even taken time to think about it in terms of the grander picture. I haven't even been thinking about terms like transitional champion or nuclear heat or anything like that that supposedly Punk has backstage. You just kind of appreciate it for the moment for what it is. I mean, CM Punk, the guy that was in Ring of Honor, the guy that was tearing up the indies at the Second City Saints, is the World Heavyweight Champion. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's just so awesome that somebody of his caliber, his skills, can rise to the top of the A show in the WWE.
WWE did actually show a lot of respect to Punk, if you think about it, because I'm sure there were a bunch of jaws dropping backstage during CM Punk's debut in the Hammerstein Ballroom, with him getting the biggest face pop of that entire ECW broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And there were tears in Punk's eyes. 6 months later, he's walking to the ring with D-Generation X, one of the foremost tag teams, and one of the biggest forces of the Attitude Era. What are the crowd chanting? CM Punk! CM Punk! CM Punk! Somebody went, holy crap, what have we found? It took time. But he had to get here. And I'm glad that I was home to see it. I wish I'd been there in person. But I'm glad that we're there. I'm glad he's there. Congratulations, Punk, wherever you landed.
But now, going later on, when JBL was the first challenger to CM Punk,
right,
did anybody think, oh, crap, we're going to have a bouncy, bouncy belt? How many people said, what are we going to do?
I had a feeling that, sadly, Vince Russo had snuck back into WWE, or at little case scenario, Ed Ferrara, who Vince Russo likes to bounce around titles.
I thought that briefly, but I realized, now, wait a minute, we just did this. We just played Follow the Bouncing Belt at No Mercy last year. I would hope that the writing staff wouldn't repeat themselves so soon, but I was still scared for Punk. I was scared.
I had thought so after the initial promo between Punk and JBL backstage. So once Cena got involved in the fray, when he talked about him deserving a shot, I figured that there was going to be either a schmoz finish or CM Punk was going to win clean thanks to some help. Not some help, but maybe a distraction from John Cena. So.
Well, you know what's really interesting? I mean, you look at now Triple H being on SmackDown, and you look at all the young guys who have now, at this moment, at least for this week, have smashed through the quote-unquote glass ceiling.
Yep.
You've got Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase holding the belts. You have Kofi Kingston, still the Intercontinental Champion, after another decent rematch with Chris Jericho. And again, by the way, Chris Jericho finally is back on Raw. He is so great as a heel right now. Am I right, Nikki?
I'm enjoying it because he's one of the few people, JBL's the other, who can say the right words in the right order and be right, but he's saying it all the wrong way. There's no other way to describe it. It's just like when JBL first started as Super Republican. He said stuff that we're going, yeah, that's right, wait. You're a bad guy.
Yeah,
and Jericho's doing that now.
Having nothing tops, his best promo was the tranquilizer-induced promo he cut in Japan.
I have that.
If there's ever a JBL DVD release, that promo's got to be on there.
But and of course, when Cena helped out CM Punk, he brought on the love of a couple of his friends, Crime Time, as well.
Yeah, his rap buddies.
I want him to cut an album.
That would be
a fun stable. But I want them to do an entire promo in street just to see if Cena can keep up with them. A la DX trying to get scalping tickets off of Crime Time in London a couple of winters ago.
That was
Shawn Michaels speaking jive. By the way, we had some dark matches on here. D'Lo Brown had a dark match against Charlie Haas.
Good for him.
But was it Lucha Man? Oh wait, he's giving that gimmick up. Damn it.
Yeah.
It was Charlie Haas billed from Dallas, Texas, and not from Oklahoma City because they wanted to play him up as a heel.
Yeah. And Gene Snitsky defeated Paul London. Paul London is from... who cares? We also have our women... We had a build-up... This is building up to... Starting out to build some good feuds to last till SummerSlam. Which I think is the next pay-per-view after Great American Bash.
So you think it's going to be a Punk JBL rematch, or do you think we're going to have Punk Cena Jiva JBL, or do you think it's going to be Punk Cena?
It's going to be Punk Cena.
Will it be face face?
It would work too.
It would work, but would it be face face? Because I've heard way too many stories about CM Punk as a heel.
Oh, Punk is awesome when heel.
It's gonna be face face though. I know Punk is an awesome heel, but he's gonna move too much merchandise to make him a face. It's gonna be something along the lines of Punter Cena. It's gonna be Punk Cena for sure.
Oh, and by the way, what about the Rey Mysterio Santino Marella stuff? Hilarious.
I was gonna just talk about that.
Sorry.
I remember this line. Santino said, "And about who wears the mask? Is he the incredibly stupid, incredibly ugly, and Batman? And you're not Batman."
No, he's not. He's Daredevil. He's a Silver Surfer. He's the lost member of the Fantastic Four. We haven't gotten to Batman yet.
Wait, Saddleman, don't you mean Rey Mysterio?
Rey Mysterio?
Who cares?
No, it's Rey Mysterio. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio. Santino, then... made a jab at the cover of the WWE magazine about Ray's cover shot. And then a photo appeared of Santino with a sensual pose of Santino.
At least he was wearing bicycle shorts.
I was expecting pantyhose, a lot of the old Joe Namath commercials. Yes, I'm dating myself.
Nikki, that's all good, because I was thinking Burt Reynolds in Cosmopolitan. That's how I am. That's how old I am.
That deserves a certain sound effect, I believe.
Settlement, if you will. I'm surprised. I thought we were going to get failed for that.
No, because I love the Burt Reynolds Cosmo reference.
but reminds me
when they wrote, when Paul Lynn wrote John Davidson on the Hollywood Squares about the his Cosmo photo shoot.
Uh-oh.
He looked like he could be the leader for underdeveloped countries.
Oh, God.
That's rude.
And Paul Lynn's an expert on that.
God love him, God's got him, and God's laughing at him.
Anyway, Santino handled the microphone and said Ray told him to make sure he uses a language everybody can understand, like we can't understand Santino. In that case, Ray whacks him with a microphone. We had a lot of microphone shots today on this episode. You count like four
punking.
Or five.
It's called punking.
And gave him a 619. And me and Nikki were just talking about what should happen. As we talked about in the past, Santino needs a bodyguard.
That we did. Now, the ongoing rumor was they were actually going to call OVW back and say, hey, I know we're not working together, but can we borrow Al Barone? Actually, there might be another Italian available, and that would be
Johnny the Bull.
Yeah, him. Alias Relic, that's killer spelled backwards for anybody who's not paying attention. but Johnny the Bull could probably buy a whole lot of cheese sandwiches with WWE's salary if he could get back on. Jump in with Santino. They go find Nunzio since he doesn't have anything better to do and reform the FBI.
We actually talked about this last week. I think a guy who should be brought up as Santino's bodyguard is a guy I actually worked with as a ring announcer in New Jersey, a guy by the name of Mike Kruhl.
Oh, good one.
Okay. And he's got the body, he's got the look, and he's got the stick. I definitely hope that they would bring him up soon as well.
And another rumor that's been running around the message boards is that we'll also have a valet, and that valet supposedly is going to be Milena Rocca.
Yeah.
Who's working down in FCW, and I guess she started promos where she's written poems about Santino Marella, so I think that that's on the horizon as well, and he's sort of revealed that storyline in interviews. He's kind of leaked that out to the public, so that may happen soon as well.
That's a shame, because Rocca is pure valet. Her wrestling is very limited from what I saw of her in OVW. I don't think that's gonna help him a whole lot, even though eye candy is a good idea for him.
And then we got to a Cody Rhodes, Ted DiBiase Jr. tag match, and we saw something around that we haven't seen in a while.
Jobbers. In red trunks, no less.
Yeah. Darren Wade and Steve
Rhodes
Anthony.
Promo?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry?
Rhodes said he grew up as the son of Dusty Rhodes and taught to do things the right way. But look where it got him. Carrying that damn baby boomer hardcore Holly. Baby boomer? Hardcore can have kids after taking all those shots to the nuts and the heart in the 24/7 run of the hardcore division? No, wait.
It's an age joke.
Yeah, it's an age joke.
But
you want to know something, though? I like what they did with this. This is sort of basing on the theme for the night, which is the young guys are starting to run the show. And I really like what they did with this. I would love for them to call themselves Team Priceless or the Priceless Ones or something like that. And I like it. I really do.
Anything but the natural born thrillers.
actually didn't mind the natural born thrillers. Teddy DiBiase Jr. took the microphone and called the fans spoiling obedient sheep, and he called himself and Rhodes simply priceless.
It's nice to see Cody Rhodes deliver something that's not just a generic promo. He kind of really came into his own, I thought, on Raw. And his father obviously being one of the best talkers in the business, it's nice to see Cody Rhodes kind of go in that direction. And I think the sky's the limit for him. He's starting to kind of come out of his shell a little bit.
Right. And especially since Cody Rhodes isn't calling the timekeeper the time keener.
Yeah. That was only one Botchamania.
And then we talk about Kofi Kingston here for a second. Kofi Kingston defeated Chris Jericho in the rematch, and before that, Chris Jericho had a good-sized promo.
Where he did what, as I said, saying the right things in the right order, the wrong way.
Yes.
That gets you booed.
Yeah.
Playing up Michael's eye injury that he is letting on. Jericho challenged Michaels to a one-on-one match at Great American Bash.
Let me tell you something. Jericho and Michaels could spend 20 minutes reading the phone book, and I'll watch, pretty much.
Yeah, they work really well together. And I have a sad feeling that this is going to lead Great American Bash to a match that I really don't want to see.
Such as a possible tag match of Jericho and Lance Cade versus Shawn Michaels and Kofi Kingston?
No, that match
even
wouldn't
worse,
be as bad.
Jake Roberts and Rick Martel bad.
Yeah.
Ooh. Lance Cade and who?
No.
He'll Jericho and Michaels.
In a blindfold match. Am I on to something there?
Yes, you're on to something. You're giving her bad memories of Chris Harris, James Storm, Lockdown, 2007.
I had to sit in the crowd and watch that. Now, there are good blindfold matches. D'Lo Brown versus Triple H back in 2002 at Raw Roulette was the bomb.
I'll go even further than that. Prince of Darkness death match. Jimmy Garvin versus Kevin Sullivan, Great American Bash. No, not Great American Bash, but Crockett Cup 88.
Before I started watching.
Oh, way before you started watching.
But, yeah, somewhere I still have a picture of Triple H with the hood on yelling at an empty turnbuckle.
Triple H is a funny guy, especially if you heard the promo on SmackDown this week. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good Lord. That was
Oh, we're going to talk about SmackDown later on in the show.
Okay.
Right.
And then we had Edge berating Hawkins the Writer, yada, yada, yada. And
by the way,
if
you were Hawkins and Ryder, would you get in the car with him? That would be a really crappy car ride. That's for damn sure.
Yes. Remember when we were the Major Brett? We were Brian and Brett Major? Shut up and drive. Yes, sir.
They're his clones. They don't have their own emotions. They don't understand.
Then CM Punk defeated JBL in a memorable World Heavyweight title match. ECW was somewhat memorable last night on Tuesday.
Last night was Tuesday?
I told you I'm stupid. I got fireworks coming to the left from me, and I got fireworks coming from the right of me.
And here
and
I am, stuck
and
in
I
the middle of
moonshine,
you,
too.
And you're stuck
anyway.
In the middle with the rest of us doofuses. ECW.
Right. Alice the Bone made his debut.
That he did, as Atlas Ortiz, pleased to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought it was an okay match. I mean, it was his debut, and this was his first time on national TV. The message board I was on, and I'm going to say this to all of my Osters, you
uh-oh.
Guys crapped all over this match. You were calling
yes.
him Atlas Backslide. You were blatantly pointing out a blown Irish whip. You sat there and crapped all over a match for a guy who's been in developmental, has worked in the same venues over the course of about a year or so. and then expect him to put on an Angle Benoit level match in front of his first nationally televised audience on live TV. You're talking a whole... Go ahead.
I've got a question for you, Nikki. Every time I've had the opportunity to go to an OVW show, Atlas was injured. So I don't really know. I've never really seen him except from just the last match that he had at ECW. But a lot of people talked about his finisher, the Boneyard Boogie. And what exactly is the Boneyard Boogie?
To be honest, I'm going to draw a blank as well because I only got to see him perform once, and that was in a six-man tag. It was him, Colt Cabana, and Jacob Duncan versus Mike Cruel, different from the announcer. I believe it was Mike Cruel, Vladimir Kozlov, and the former Amish Roadkill. And Atlas supposedly injured his shoulder, which he didn't. I talked to him later about that. But he's been laid up in recent months with a knee injury. He did travel with the company. I ran into him in Louisville at a Raw house show. And he was just there to watch. And most of the time he'd show up at Second Saturdays in Cincinnati. DJ knows what I'm talking about. And he'd have a chair. He hasn't been wrestling. So let's combine change of venue, true WWE travel schedule, just off an injury with ring rust and nerves. And you want an Angle Benoit five-star classic. Oster, shut up. And you compared him to Evan Bourne, who has Ring of Honor experience, extensive Ring of Honor experience. You've got two completely different animals. I'm done.
You know what, Nikki? I give you a lot of credit for saying this, because we as wrestling fans, there's a lot of different levels of wrestling fans, and and we have the bars set up high. And what bothers me a lot, and I go to a lot of wrestling shows, is when wrestlers work their ass off and they just chant boring because it's not a high spot fest. Drives me up a tree. And good for you for calling these fans out, because it's a debut match, for crying out tears. Give the guy a shot.
Thank you. Now, I will say this. There was one time that I can understand where the fans were coming from. I think it was actually Cyber Sunday a couple of years ago, where we had Jeff Hardy and Carlito in a match. And they decided to go technical. And people were saying, no, wait a minute. That's not how they wrestle.
But hey, I've seen the Big Show and Kane go technical, and that was brilliant.
That was beautiful. That was a brilliant match.
I'm sorry. I saw Big Show and Kane do that, and I was just floored by it because it was great. It was great. I've actually seen Kane do a Hurricane Rana. I've seen him do it live.
I haven't seen it in person, but I'll tell you what. He's been doing a lot of agility moves lately. I've seen an Enziguri out of a man 6'10".
Yes.
Scares me.
Yeah, exactly.
And one other thing to take away from all of this is I'm really intrigued by where this new talent initiative is going to be heading. You have your two big brands, Raw and SmackDown. ECW's roster has been depleted. So I'd like to see a lot of the younger guys from FCW have an opportunity to get featured on television. It's going to be great for all of us to see who Teddy Long is going to bring up to the roster in the next few weeks.
If Colt Cabana does not debut before SummerSlam, I will be sadly disappointed.
And Sean Spears as well. Sean Spears is a big-time heel. I love him.
Yeah.
The regimental of OVW needs to be on TV.
Yeah, let's talk about some TNA.
Now, you folks are going to have to help me out. I unfortunately missed the show because I was helping somebody with their internet.
Who all missed the show? I know. I missed most of it.
I missed most of it as well.
I actually saw a good part of it.
All right, we'll talk some TNA.
We'll try.
The main thing that was going on in TNA were three things. The X Division, the World X Cup. The Chantel Taylor and Risha Saeed. And
the
Kurt Angle.
It's the Kurt Angle show.
No, it's... God, I wish I had the theme. It's the dating game with your hosts, Brother Ray and Brother Devon.
Oh, my Lord. I'm sorry I missed this.
Well, actually, it wasn't like the dating game, but three dates. Actually, no, it blind date. I don't know the Roger Lodge blind date theme, so I just did the dating game theme, but it's more like blind date.
All right.
I think the only couple people that I know who I'm talking about is Jason and myself.
What did I need to talk about? I'm sorry. I lost
blind date.
Oh, Blind Date. Blind Date was a show hosted by Roger Lodge. And Roger Lodge explained this Blind Date, and they had cameras everywhere. But if you remember a show, and again, I'm dating myself here, called Pop-Up Video.
Mm-hmm.
Any remember that?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where you actually read the thoughts, at least scripted by these people, what they were thinking as they were going on the date. And it was very funny stuff. Really funny stuff. On for a couple of years.
All right. I think
99 to 2004.
All right.
So the first one, Kurt Angle met his first day at the gym. Tiffany, the human medicine ball.
Oh.
Ugh.
Needless to say, Kurt Angle gave the old...
I'm surprised that wasn't a dragon fail.
Nope, that's
We're
not the dragon
there.
Fail.
We're getting
there. Date number two. Kurt Angle told the state he was an Olympic gold medalist and likes to manhandle men. Kurt Angle went on and on about his wife and didn't even notice that the date was a guy until Jeremy Borash told him.
Okay, that's a major fail. Epic, epic fail. Washing your car in the rain, epic fail.
No, it gets worse.
Okay.
Kurt Angle was out with date number three, and he couldn't stop talking about himself. The girl was actually half decent, but kept excusing herself from the table. Kurt yelled at the girl and excused her throwing up over the food he brought. The girl said that she had a medical condition. And Kurt and Jeremy Borash made jokes that laughed and laughed at her until she stormed off. Kurt said he was going to kill Brother Ray next time he sees him.
Well, we had to tell him what the medical condition was.
I don't know. It doesn't say.
Oh, it says. You weren't ready for it?
I got it. It was a spastic colon.
What? Vince Russo needs to be kicked in the colon.
I'm sure Jason will join you.
Dustin Bell was kicked in his semicolon. Anyway,
That's a bird.
It was just gross.
On second thought, I'm almost glad I was helping somebody with their internet.
I don't know, we had a great street fight match between Moose and Roxy Laveau.
Okay, that I'm disappointed I missed, because I haven't seen enough about this Moose.
Moose is a woman by the name of Mickey Knuckles, who I actually saw in at a match on Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Pro Wrestling Unplugged.
Yeah, Pro Wrestling Unplugged, my apologies, in Philadelphia at the old ECW New Alhambra Arena when she wrestled her teacher, Ian Rotten, in a No Holds Barred match.
Go ahead.
and basically took about 10 unprotected chair shots to the head.
I know a little bit about her background, and you know she may as well be the daughter of Ian Rotten. It's just I really have not seen much of her work, and the fact that we have a woman of her size who's hardcore is very unique.
Yes, it is.
I'm looking for. I hope she sticks with TNA because I would pay a lot of money for No Holds Barred Mickey Knuckles versus Awesome Kong.
Oh yeah.
But how would you turn Moose Face?
Since she's the bodyguard of the beautiful people, it wouldn't be that hard. They'd essentially pull what they did with Roxy. Because Moose isn't exactly, you know, they call her Moose, and then they're going to call her a lot of other names. And eventually she's going to turn around, and she's going to tie the beautiful people in a great big pink frilly knot.
Oh, and by the way, I happen to also love the beautiful people gimmick, too. Very good stuff.
It is, and I wish I had the time to congratulate Velvet Sky when I saw her a couple of weekends ago. But we've got 14 minutes to get to the rest of TNA and SmackDown, and I won't have time to talk. Well, I can do mine in archive. Where were we?
Gonna finish up TNA quickly. Matt Morgan had his second to last rough cut. Meaning we're gonna probably see him debut on American Gladiators next week.
Okay.
Thank God, because they've been hyping it for way too long.
Surprised they didn't get dropped since they had to cut 30 minutes off of Gladiators.
Hold on. Something's not right here. The pan was left on, so I heard sizzling, so I had to turn it off.
Okay.
Chantel Taylor defeated Rasha Sae to earn a title shot against Mason Kong.
Now, does Rasha Sae, I don't know, does wrestle with the burka on?
Yep.
They don't want to give away that she really is cheerleader Melissa.
Melissa, yes. Okay. Okay.
SmackDown.
What a wonderful show.
Yeah.
Triple H, man, I'm sorry, he is one funny SOB. That promo with MVP was off the chart funny.
Just beautiful.
Are they turning MVP's face?
They've been teasing that a lot because he's had a lot of heat. He's had a lot of friction with Vicky. I didn't know if it was possible, but I think we're going that way because Hunter and MVP had brilliant chemistry in the promo, and since they didn't start fighting, and Hunter started shooting, and now my dear bodyguard Bear was over tonight to watch SmackDown with me, and I had to explain to him why I was laughing so hard
yeah.
at Hunter's wedding advice.
Best part is not only is he shooting, he was shooting on himself.
That's a rare man that can shoot on himself.
And the CM Punk puns were pretty funny, too, just the way they delivered it.
Oh, that was great. That was awesome.
I also love this one at the beginning. Triple H made fun of MVP's recently, and MVP said his state-of-the-art gear could be considered performance enhancing. Might get a call from Dr. Black to jerk them in 30 days off.
That's not right.
It's not right, but as a friend of mine says, accurate but wrong. Okay.
Correct.
Then they showed footage of CM Punk beating Edge for the world title on Raw. Both of them started to make fun of it, like, wow. I guess you can see that Edge got punked out.
Hardy ha ha. And then you hear the two worst lines, and by the way, like, excuse me.
I think I can do it.
Okay.
Excuse me. Excuse me. I'm trying to talk here.
And man, does she get heel heat. And by the way, that's the sign of a good heel, when you can just say two words and have garbage thrown at you.
Now, what the only thing that worried me, though, is the fact that she's the general manager. She gets the biggest heat of any heel on the entire show. Is that a bad thing?
No,
not at all. It shows that she's doing great work, and God bless Vince McMahon. You could say a lot of crap about him, but he's paying her to make sure her kids can go to college. Sorry. You know that, and I know that.
That's right. I just worry about that, because it's the guys in the ring that, you know, put butts in the seats.
But you want to know something? I think, for example, like Edge, for example,
yeah.
Edge can say anything and do anything, especially on SmackDown, and he will sell tickets because he's the best heel out there, period. End of story. He can do anything.
He can blow his nose and get booed. He could walk an old lady across the street and get booed.
He could just smile at me and get booed, but, well, I won't boo.
You know, so, and again, Edge just shows how good he was tonight, because he was just so on in where he was going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the idea of, I don't care about the tie, I don't care about you, I don't care about our wedding, I don't care about anything. The greatest line, I feel naked, you know? Great line.
Wait, hold on a second. I'm gonna play the last part of that promo with a special sound effect that I added in a couple minutes from now when we get to it.
Okay.
I'm gonna have a stupid moment of the week right here, right now.
Go.
Woo! Whoever came up with the idea of the new Divas Championship?
Oh, God.
That was designed exclusively by Sailor Moon. Anyway.
Venus.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Somebody
is an anime fan, and I'm loving you for it, because, yeah. No, actually, it looked more like My Little Pony myself, actually.
Oh, God.
That's another direction, but I looked at that and I said, oh my God. And one of the message boards posted some pictures of it because of apparently some pirated YouTubing, thanks to our buddies in Australia. If any of you guys are listening, thanks. They dared all of the belt collectors to buy one. Just dare.
Well, you've got it. Like I said, you've got to be as confident as Batista wearing a thong to buy that belt. So,
why doesn't it have a purple leather strap, though? I'm disappointed.
Well, you know, I don't know, but you know what? I think Natalia versus Michelle McCool is going to be an awesome match, and when Natalia wins that belt, it's going to be great.
I'm for it. I just wish Natalia was actually fighting for a gold women's belt on the other show.
Yeah, okay.
And something not aquamarine and amethyst at best.
How the mighty have fallen. High Spots must have busted a gut laughing when they saw that thing come roll off the belt.
Okay. We move on, Hawkins and Ryder got blamed for Edge losing the world title on Raw.
And then got fed.
They got fed to Festus.
Uncle Sam Festus.
Yeah, right. And then Uncle Sam Festus got fed to Edge.
So that tells me that Edge still likes his clones. They're a part of him. Sorry. I was there the night the clones hatched. So, you know, it's gonna stick for a while. Yes, you were. That's true. We were over by the ramp. We couldn't see a darn thing. Shawn Matthews
was fun for me to see too.
Shawn Matthews is trying to look over the crowd because nobody's sitting down at this point. All I hear is, there's two edges in the ring. I said, that's not possible. Of course, we're both looking at the ring because we're idiots. Not, I didn't look at the bloody... Go ahead.
I didn't notice until one was down underneath the turnbuckles and then the real edge popped in. So it was really hard for me to see until the very end. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. The Jumbotron's over there. I never
Also, in here, Jeff Hardy defeated John Morrison.
Great match.
Good, beautiful match.
Yeah, beautiful match. Umaga was fed a funaki.
Stuffed him in a sandwich and ate him and loved every bite.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what you need to do. You need to build him back up as a really kick-ass monster because he's lost that edge, so to speak.
SmackDown, number one jobber.
Very good.
4th of July Fatal 4-Way for the U.S. title. Matt Hardy beat Kennedy, Chavo, and Benjamin to retain the title. I sense these four, you could also throw in Jeff Hardy and John Morrison. No, but throw in Jeff Hardy and Umaga to get a good mix of face heel.
And this one, unfortunately, was hardly in doubt. Then again, you have to be a dirt sheet reader for that. Because Kennedy being moved to SmackDown may have given him some more room, but nobody has any plans for him. And Shelton Benjamin has been put in that special ring of hell right next to P.S. Hayes. I feel I worry for the gold standard right now.
So do I, because he had so much potential. Really, I love him. I think he's great. I really do.
But that's potential is the longest dirty word in wrestling. Test had potential. A-Train had potential. Masters had potential.
No, he didn't. Sorry.
Okay. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Simon, you had a clip for us.
Yep. And here's the clip. We're going to end the show tonight on a special moment. Edge's, the last few minutes of Edge's promo from tonight. Before I continue on with this, Jason Black, I think you might know that any Game Show fan listening might recognize the music I'm going to play at the end of the segment.
Okay.
I have one last public statement to make to all of these people and to make to you. The wedding is on!
Okay.
Recognize the sound, Jason?
That was the Sale of the Century jackpot theme, I believe.
That's it.
Now, again, great stuff by Edge and Eddie, God rest his soul, Vicky Guerrero on this. Vicky was just so annoying, and that scream at the end was brilliant. Brilliant stuff.
And I'm going to be making a... I'm going to download the torrent, and I'm making a video of that, and I'm posting it on YouTube, and I don't care if it gets taken down. To the archives, good night, everybody. See you next time. Well, here we are at the archives.
Ah. No offense, yeah. Mr. Settlement, I couldn't hear a whiff of that last segment.
I could barely hear the music at all myself. No offense.
I heard nothing because it was blowing out my speaker.
Hold on. Let me just say a few words. Let me see if something's going on. Yes. You have your Bluetooth on, right?
I do.
Bingo. The usual problem.
Even if I just hit, if I just had my regular phone on, it would do the same thing.
All right. Okay. Once again, fun week of wrestling. Wasn't a game.
This was, as I said, best week in wrestling in God knows how long.
Best week of wrestling that I've ever watched since. I'm going to go back to December 28, 1998.
Well, no. Again, this wrestling's peak to me was WrestleMania 20, and I was there live in Madison Square Garden. God rest his soul.
Lucky soul.
Oh, yes, I was. Unfortunately, where my seats were, there was where the bunch of wires were. So most of the action was blocked. But let me tell you something. I can say naughty words, right? Pretty much.
Please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So during the Benoit Michaels Triple H match, and let me tell you something. Also, after the incredibly excellent Eddie Guerrero Kurt Angle match.
Mm-hmm.
When Chris Benoit had Triple H in the Crippled Crossface, and I can't believe I'm talking about him, there were like 18 to 20,000 people screaming, "Tap, you mother effer, tap!" You know, and I was screaming. And when he did, this was sort of a hug your strangers moment. And then afterwards, when you have Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit hugging in the ring, and you realize now, A, they're both dead, and B, WWE has not reached that creative peak since. Sorry. This week was a start. Just a start. Don't ever forget that.
No, I think we will see that when we get Punk still champ. I will call him the Eddie Guerrero. And fill that Benoit deal
will be Jeff Hardy, my friend.
Yes,
there you go.
It will.
Okay. Let me tell you something, and again, I said this last week, Nikki, and you didn't hear this. You may have on the archives. I think the move to SmackDown by Jeff Hardy, this is basically Vince McMahon saying, "Look, behave yourself, you stupid moron. We wanted to give you the belt because we know you're freaking over with the fans, okay? And if he behaves himself in SmackDown, he might get a title there and then moved over to Raw and then actually get into the main event where he should be. Praise God, let's hope he stays clean. Seriously.
Well, he's got a few things going for him, now that he's on SmackDown. Since ECW still travels with SmackDown, Matt Hardy's right there.
For now, but then Raw will be traveling with ECW soon.
Mm-hmm. And
I heard that was just for house shows, though.
So it's not going to be for TV?
No, just house shows.
So Matt's going to be right there to slap him alongside the head and say, "Jeff, don't even think about it."
I hope. I really hope.
I hope so, too.
Right. I would love to see this picture, this title picture on SmackDown. Jeff the World title, Matt Hardy the U.S. title, Morrison and Miz still the tag champs. And Natalya Neidhart as the Diva champion. Ugh.
Yeah, well,
even
yeah.
With shit fuck belt.
The anime belt, let's call it.
Yes.
Okay, we'll call it the anime belt.
Okay.
The Sailor Moon Invitational title. Come on, you had to pull a star down to get to the inaugural match.
Yes.
Sailor Venus. Sailor Mercury. Sailor Mars.
All right, okay.
Sailor Jupiter.
Oh, okay.
Don't make me dig out the live action crap that DIC tried to make.
Oh. Oof. Bad. Out of all my DVDs, I have only one anime DVD.
Shame on you.
Tenchi Muyo, the last 7 episodes.
My anime collection is still mostly on video. I was a Dragon Ball fan before Dragon Ball was cool in the States. I'll say that. But I have the entire run of Dragon Ball GT, including the supposed lost episode near the end of the series. I have 99% of Dragon Ball Z, and none of it was touched by Funimation. None. My DVD is composed mostly of Sorcerer Hunters, which I recommend highly, Saint Seiya, which I will also recommend, or Knights of the Zodiac. I'm not sure how that version plays.
Both stuff are good.
And to date myself, I have 6 DVDs of Battle of the Planet.
Bingo. Do you have is that the UK set?
No, this was the set that was actually released here. It had the Battle of the Planets, the original Ninja Gaishaman episodes that they were taken from,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of them had the Ted Turner debacle.
Ooh.
Stuff.
G-Force, yuck.
That,
okay.
I can't get past the intro. I can't even get past the intro to watch them.
Excuse me, Hootie to his friends. There you go.
No, grr. I will watch 20 minutes of the freaking Ready Room drawn in America for this Japanese cartoon before I will watch Ted Turner's massacre of this series. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Trust me, I'm an anime fan. It's amazing. Again, dating myself, I remember going to sci-fi cons and seeing Akira for the 50th time, at least in a film room, and then getting third-generation tapes of stuff, and then now you can just get it off of torrents the week of, incredibly fan-subbed, you know?
Exactly, and I was on the fringe of that, because a lot of the OVA, the Dragon Ball OVAs, there were 2 outfits in New York that were doing fan-subs, and I had a supplier who took about 5 tries to get the tapes to me, but when I did get them, the video quality was still good, and they were beautifully subtitled.
Mm.
I still have most of them.
And again, there's just some really good stuff right now. Getting back to the wrestling thing. I mean, do you see this whole youth being served sort of deal being a one-time thing, or do you think this is going to be a direction that the WWE is changing?
It has to be a long-term thing, because if you take a look at all the big, big stars they have, I mean, the veterans that are there, the average age, 43. I'm talking about their big 5 stars. Michaels, who's about 48.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not 48.
Well, he's
43.
Around there.
43? He's 43, I believe.
Trampson is nearing 40.
37 or 38.
38. Batista's over 40.
He don't look it, though. I had a grandfather, strangely enough.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Wow. Edge, 34, 35.
And Undertaker's 46.
Yeah, Undertaker's 46.
So, but Cena's is Cena 30 yet or not?
Not yet.
Yeah, about 29.
I was going to say he's 28 or 29.
But again, you're going to have to build some people. As a matter of fact, it's really interesting. Looking at it, I just picked up, and by the way, again, if you do not go and get the Ric Flair DVD set this week, you are not a wrestling fan.
Or you are very broke, like
yeah.
me.
Yeah, that too. But I just picked up the Rock DVD set, which is still very good. You don't realize how good he actually really was,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he was one of those. He was Orton before Orton was cool, if you remember correctly.
Right.
Because he was basically in 1996 forced down our throats. 3 months later, he wins the Intercontinental title, and everyone hated his guts.
Die, Rocky, die.
Exactly. But he turned that into something that was really, really awesome. Randy Orton can't turn shit out of a paper bag because he can't act.
No, he'd
Thank
rather
you.
Poop into a paper bag and
yeah.
put it in somebody's bag.
No.
He just poops in diva bag.
Yeah. yeah. He's got the promo skills of a brick. Okay? He just does.
DiBiase Jr. and Cody Rhodes sound better than Randy Orton, and Randy Orton's got a 5-year head start on him.
Yeah, exactly, and that's scary. That's absolutely scary.
Actually, it's
now,
more like a 6-year head start.
Well, yeah, but to this youth movement, it's kind of interesting. I think Vince has been forced, not only because of the age of his main eventers, but even if he will not publicly acknowledge right now TNA as competition at any level, we're kind of seeing what he did 10 years ago. He realizing that it's getting a little gray at the top. It's time to start building new stars.
And that's the reason why Vince succeeds so well is that he's got to have an enemy to fight. When he has no enemy, he gets big, fat, and lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and sorry to say, TNA is competition. He is, because let me tell you something. I'm not going to say my good buddy, but the guy who is at the top of TNA right now, Samoa Joe. Samoa
right.
Joe, I saw live first at the first Ring of Honor show before ECW One Night Stand 1. I don't know if you were in New York for that. And let me tell you something.
2005, before when
I was there. I was there. I was
at
One Night Stand. I didn't go to the. I did not get to go to the Ring of Honor show though.
Okay, I went to the Ring of Honor show, and I'm going. All right, who? I've heard of this guy Samoa Joe. He's 300 pounds. What can he do? Boy, did he impress the shit out of me. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And this guy showed me something. And Samoa Joe at the top. I also saw him. I saw him at Webster Hall. I forgot who he fought at. I think he fought AJ Styles, if I'm not mistaken.
Hold on. I want to go back to now the ECW One Night Stand 2005. What was that? June 13th?
2005, yeah.
Oh, the day before?
11th.
Futures Now. Futures Now, and Samoa Joe defeated Nigel McGuinness to retain the Pure title.
Okay.
And looking back at 2005, my God, listen to this card. Colt Cabana versus Jimmy Rave. Carnage Crew versus Ring Crew Express. Azariel, BJ Whitmer, Jack Evans, Izzy, Deranged, and Fast Eddie.
Prince Nana, I believe, was on that card.
Yeah, as Jimmy Rave's manager. Boston Superstar versus Derek Dempsey. Shane Douglas.
On a bad promo, but yes, no one believed a word he said.
Right. Homicide versus James Gibson. What's he doing now?
Getting his head stomped in by Kane.
Yeah. CM Punk defeated Roderick Strong. This was his, the last match would be next week. Smojo versus Niles McGuinness, and as your main event, Low-Key versus Austin Aries.
Yes. Unreal.
And quick note, Punk's last match was Death Before Dishonor 3. His last he said it would be his last match, but he ended up staying for a few more weeks. A few more months when he turned heel.
To ride the You Sold Out wave.
Yep.
Because I saw him at an OVW show in December of 05.
Yep.
And almost ended up with him in my lap. He did a dark match at a Raw in Cleveland and really did not impress anybody, but that might not have been his fault. Again, the debut match issues.
And just to make a quick note.
Yeah.
Death Before Dishonor 3, I believe, is the most sought-after Ring of Honor DVD of all time.
Okay.
I mean, if you look that up on eBay, you're looking at spending a good $30-$40 for it.
Oh, and by the way, when I was at that show, I bought a Ring of Honor DVD. I'm looking for it here on my thing called, I think it was, what is it here? Yes, Ring of Honor. Please Don't Die, The Best of Paul London.
Hey, but don't laugh. Paul London was awesome in Ring of Honor.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. But what I'm saying, again, what I'm saying to you is I think this is going to be a youth. This is going to be the turn of something. Vince knows it. He's not stupid. And I think this is going to be something that will not necessarily pay off right away, but give it 2 to 3 months, and you're going to see something really fun.
I would like to point out that this could be like the time around 91, 92, when, you know, you had Hogan as a champ for a long time, you had Slaughter as a champ. Those guys were really old. No disrespect to Sergeant Slaughter, but he was in the business for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're going back to late 70s. We're going back to mid-70s AWA, where his first big feud was against Rock and Roll Buck Zumoff and Boris Zukov.
Mm-hmm.
Then jumping to the WWWF.
No, but what are you going on with the idea of the 91-92? What are you thinking?
The champions that you had there were getting up there. They were getting old. Warrior was breaking down, but that's because of steroid use. Slaughter was over 40. And you had Hogan, who was shoved down everybody's throats. And if you watch the Survivor Series match, Taker versus Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear a clear pop when Undertaker hit the tombstone on Hogan.
Yeah, because Hogan, with all due respect, makes the Cena experiment look crazy. I mean, because let me tell you something. Cena tries hard, and I respect his work, but he can't wrestle for shit. He can't.
Thank you. You're not the only person who has said that.
Okay.
I've had some interesting stories. I really don't want to drop any names.
Okay.
But I was down in Hamilton working on a ring for a promoter who is trying to get a wrestling ministry started, who I am the unofficial general manager for. We had a wrestling veteran who has very, very deep roots with Heartland Wrestling Association, the original.
Okay.
And Cena's name came up, and the promoter just shook his head and said the kid's got charisma, but he couldn't wrestle to save his life. The other gentleman said that he occasionally takes students, and he watched one kid try to do a couple of moves like Cena. And he got in the ring and stopped everything and said, "Don't you ever do that again. You're going to do this correctly." And, you know, I can't knock Cena for his charisma. I cannot knock Cena for his polarizing of crowds. I was in that madhouse in the ballroom the night he fought Rob Van Dam.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I walked around the arena. I had people telling me, yes, we are going to bring this building down around everybody's ears if John Cena wins. And they meant it.
I remember the infamous sign.
If Cena wins, we riot. Yes.
Bingo.
I met that gentleman this year. He was at the Garden for the Rumble, and he was sitting right in front of me. And we started talking about that show. And I told him, dude, I was on the floor. I'm four rows back. I'm under the balcony where JBL was when he did his tirade about when he was going to go to the announce table. And this was all crap. As the Cena-Rob Van Dam match is going on, they've already cut the ties to the pay-per-view chairs. I folded my chair up and handed it to Bear because if I didn't, we wouldn't have left the arena with it. People were stealing chairs. People were arming themselves. People were preparing for that riot. I was looking for exits.
You really think that if they booked it with Cena winning, you would have cops called?
Yes.
Knowing the ECW fans, the diehard ECW fans, you would see something more violent and more discouraging than the... Remember 1994 ECW? They showed a lot of clips on this on the ECW DVD, which I proudly own. All those chairs flying into the ring?
Yes.
All of them will be locked on Cena.
And it wouldn't stop there. There would be people willing to climb the guardrail. Atlas Security can't stop us all. Stone Cold Jimmy of WWE Security was nervous.
By the way, I actually met Ponytail Guy from WWE Security. I forget his name.
Ponytail Guy.
You see him on all the WWE shows. But he's a nice guy. I think it is his name may be Jimmy and all that sort of stuff.
No, all the security guards are named Jimmy. That's a standard. If you're not named Jimmy, you can't be hired.
Yeah, but I will tell you, ECW pay-per-views at the Hammerstein are notoriously nutty. I was at the Guilty as Charged, the very last one.
Ooh.
Okay.
I think that was like January 05, I believe, something like
no,
that.
No, January 01.
01.
Okay. And the Sinister Minister was there, James
uh-huh.
Mitchell. And he was just
yes.
sitting on the side. This was right after his hand accident. I go, how's the hand? He goes, fucking good enough to hold a beer. And he was drinking it. So, nice guy.
No, he's a great guy. I've had the honor of sitting and talking with him. Now, get a load of this little table. When I went to lockdown last summer, I had the honor of getting into the area where the wrestlers were having dinner and chatting it up. I actually got to sit for about a half an hour with James Mitchell and Mr. Cornette.
Okay, and you did not wet your pants right there?
No, I just sat there reverently and let them tell stories.
Uh-huh.
I was very quiet in my markdom. Mainly because James Storm was all pissy because he didn't like the way we were shitting on his match. And I didn't feel like getting a beer bottle broken over my head. I wanted to hear stuff from Mitchell and Cornette.
Okay.
And, oh, it was glorious. It was absolutely glorious. I want to shake Mitchell's hand the next time if he does come back to TV with TNA and... I run into him. I hope to proudly shake his hand once more after he throttled me once at a show.
Oh, man. Now, when I said I worked with Mike Kruel, not as a wrestler, as a ring announcer, announcing Kruel.
Yeah.
Not anything like that. I've worked with Mike Kruel, Chris Candido, may he rest in peace, Balls Mahoney, lots of New York independent guys, and most of these guys work damn hard. I also work a lot with Tom Brandy. Tom Brandy's a great guy. Great guy to work with. He does the Patriot gimmick. He's the Patriot gimmick and also does Sal Sincere.
Oh,
right.
God. Sal Sincere got inducted into WrestleCraft, by the way, for those that are listening on the archives.
Oh. But, it's all about history. It's all about time. I think this may be one of those transitional periods where we might be on the upswing. I really believe this.
I hope
like
so.
From 90, late 95, Punk winning the belt was like WrestleMania 12 with Shawn Michaels winning the belt, Vader coming into WWF. You're starting to see the dissipation of Hulk Hogan in WCW. You were starting to see a whole bunch of cool stuff in WCW, mainly the cruiserweight division.
Mm-hmm.
I won't really see it that way. I see it more of a just sort of a move. Not shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic. It was just sort of the idea of moving different people into the top spots, And, again, with Triple H on SmackDown and actually doing what needs to do for business, because the Jim Ross Triple H move was a business move for my network, nothing more. There was no disrespect intended, although Jim Ross should have been told. That was a really screwed up move.
Mm-hmm.
But with Triple H being, behind the scenes all the time, it really isn't a bother for him to actually be on the quote-unquote roster, okay? So Triple H being there, awesome, very cool. And it also, you saw what it did on Raw. CM Punk, the CM Punk JBL triumvirate is going to be really great. I just can't stand JBL. I really can't. He's just annoying.
He's a great talker. I will give him that. It took him a couple of months to really get into his groove on SmackDown, but when he's on, he's amazing. You just got to watch out when his CD starts to skip. AKA Rey Mysterio walks out. Dirty, filthy Mexican, blah, blah, blah. Same shit, different match.
Right.
And that's why Ray's on Raw. Anyway,
And isn't it odd that out of the SmackDown 6, the big six wrestlers who made SmackDown, Angle, Guerrero, Benoit, Mysterio, Edge, and... Chavo.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it now. Edge and Chubb are the last two standing, but technically Edge is the last man standing.
Well, Ray, and the problem is Ray can't keep himself healthy.
Uh-uh.
He's finally coming apart. Chavo is, I think, at this point, is damaged goods.
Yeah, he's. And plus, here's the funny thing: I watch AWA Championship Wrestling almost every night.
Uh huh.
And you know what I saw in there?
What?
A hair treatment commercial promo. I saw Larry Zbyszko's head on there.
And also Chavo's there, for real.
Chavo was there.
He had it done.
I heard that Chris Masters got mixed up in one of those.
Not Masters, no.
Hmm.
But Jimmy Hart was.
Well, he needed it.
Yeah, he needed it.
Yeah.
I mean, Jimmy Hart did a lot of things that he would pull his hair out. First Family, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the 99 WCW stable, where he only had one good guy and the rest were garbage. Let's see here. He also did Carmen Electra's Naked Wrestling.
Oh.
I don't even want to know.
No. Oh, and by the way, Nikki, let me just tell you something. It has been an awesome pleasure to speak with you for the first time.
This has been fun. I'm really enjoying it tonight. I would hope that if I ever get out your way again, that we could cross paths. I don't have, you know, outside of my quote-unquote dear uncle, who, by the way, was extolling Edge as much as we do in his recent blog on the Sun website.
Oh, by the way, Heyman's thing was great. That was just unreal.
I'm enjoying his blogs. I've not seen a whole lot of his videos. This is truth. I've actually went ahead to Rob Van Dam's MySpace and sent him a note that RVD TV and the Heyman Hustle need to get together somehow, some way, sometime. And it's got to happen soon. Rob said he'd look into it, but I haven't heard anything. I really want it to happen.
Yep.
I would just want to sit and listen to those two for 2 hours. Just talk.
Rob Feinstein, we're calling you. Do a Paul Heyman and RVD straight shooting series DVD.
Please. And invite me because I have television experience. I mean, I can handle a camera. Honest.
So can Feinstein.
Oh, let's not go there with that.
No, I wasn't going there. I'll go him and Amazing Red, but the other thing is way too messy.
But seriously, this is gonna be interesting to watch. Let's just hope Vince does not drop the ball. And by the way, the SmackDown 6 was a great part, I believe, of 99 and 2000. That was just
actually it was later than that. It was 2002.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason I can say that is I was thankful to have actually attended some of the SmackDown 6 shenanigans during the tumultuous times when Angle and Benoit were a tag team under threat of death from Stephanie McMahon.
I remember the Halloween episode of SmackDown from 2002.
I was at one that was leading up to Survivor Series where... it wasn't the trophy. I don't think it was the trophy show, but it was an instance where Angle and Benoit were permitted to wrestle each other.
Oh, because Stephanie was quite. Was this part of the McMahon-Helmsley era?
No.
This was after the McMahon-Helmsley era. Stephanie McMahon was the general manager of SmackDown at the time before Paulie took over.
Was this a heel? Was she a heel?
Tweener at best.
Okay.
Tweener, because essentially, in the case of Angle and Benoit, she was their babysitter.
This was during the time when Raw and SmackDown were both bidding and trying to get Scott Steiner.
Right. That is just into that time. The SmackDown tag titles were just being introduced. Angle and Benoit were together as a tag team, and they didn't want to work with each other. They wanted to kill each other.
In real life?
Huh?
In real life?
No,
I wasn't going to go there. But it was one of these things. Angle and Benoit were going to wrestle each other. Los Guerreros came out. Edge and Ray came out. And they decided they were going to sit at ringside and watch the match. Angle gets Benoit down to the mat, puts him in the lasso from El Paso,
mm-hmm.
looks at the Guerreros and says, "This hold sucks."
Oh, my God.
Sets off the Latino tempers. They jump in the ring. Edge and Ray don't want to be left out. They jump in the ring. Great big Pier 6 brawl. When the dust settles, Angle and Benoit are the only ones standing. They shake hands. And you know Angle. Tag team partners don't shake hands.
They hug.
Tag team, they got a hug. So they hug. And you see this... You see Benoit with the most uncomfortable look on his face. Angle steps away, and then he decides he's going to keep going with it. And he actually steps up and tries to do the European cheek kiss thing.
Oh, my God.
I have never seen Benoit move so fast. Next thing you know, Benoit's halfway up the ramp. And Angle's leaning over the ropes going, "Where's the love?"
Oh, my God.
Now, at this point, the camera's have been turned off. And Edge and Ray are getting up, getting ready to go to the back, and Edge decides, you know, he decides that, yeah, tag team partner's got a hug. Now, imagine this image of little Ricochet, I mean Ray, running up the ramp with gangly Edge chasing after him with his arms stuck out like the one ant you don't want to talk to.
Okay. Gotta ask this. This is, you're talking about cameras off stuff.
Right.
Cameras off stuff, sorry. What is the best thing that you have seen off camera? Like, in other words, that when cameras were off at a WWE or any taping that you've seen?
Wow, that's a tough one. Because
if you remember, there was a time during when Booker T just came in when they were like 40 minutes off camera when they were doing like spinneroonies and stuff, and The Undertaker was.
Well, yeah, The Undertaker, I can give you my one of the better Undertaker moments. Actually, he did this twice. Once shortly after he came back because Paul Bearer was still with him, and then another time like 7 or 8 months later. Undertaker hates JBL as much as you do.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you an example. 2 weeks after, 2 weeks or maybe just a week after WrestleMania, JBL and Eddie were at each other's throats. This was the show that Eddie stole JBL's hat.
Right.
And
okay.
Walked around and everybody dropped crap in it.
Right.
I almost came home with that hat. Anyway. It pretty much ends with Eddie taunting JBL, and JBL's still in the ring. Eddie goes to the back. Now the cameras are turned off. JBL picks up a microphone and starts screaming for Eddie to come out and apologize and take his medicine like a man. They do Undertaker's full entrance.
Okay.
Paul Bearer and all. At this point, JBL starts to waver at best. I was asking for Eddie. I don't want to fight you. Mr. Bearer, please tell Undertaker that I don't have a beef with him. And Paul Bearer would look at the crowd, and the crowd would just start getting louder and louder. And JBL would look at us, dumbfounded, and shouted to the microphone, "Will you stop cheering for him? He's going to kick my ass!" And that's precisely what he did. Beat the piss out of JBL and tombstoned him. He did that right after Mania, and he did it the SmackDown right after Survivor Series 04. This was right after the segment where this was the JBL's tirade. I don't speak Spanish. I don't speak Ebonics, and I don't speak Monster.
He must have been fighting Kane that night.
Pardon?
He must have fought Kane that night if he says I don't speak Monster.
No, he pointed at The Undertaker.
Oh, man. Yeah,
Teddy Long had just announced the Fatal 4-Way at Armageddon that year. It was Eddie, Booker, Taker, and JBL. JBL was the champion. And he didn't want to fight any of these guys. And, of course, Teddy Long is so accommodating. What a wonderful face GM he is. Sets up the Fatal 4-Way. When the cameras turn off, Booker carefully backs out of the ring and leaves. After all, he's had his feud with The Undertaker already. Eddie leaves because he's not worried about any of these guys attacking him. Leaving JBL alone with The Undertaker. As he picks up the microphone, he looks at Undertaker and says, "You can go now. I want to finish my celebration." Of course, Undertaker doesn't move. And it leads into the exact same scenario. The crowd just wants Undertaker to destroy JBL, and JBL wants us to shut up because Taker will do it. And he did. That's one of the better ones. I've been to a couple of SmackDowns where nothing has happened. I've been to SmackDowns where I've actually seen do-overs.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Now, the worst do-over I ever saw, it was so bad that, I mean, we were sitting there slapping our forehead. It was a cruiserweight match. It was Billy Kidman versus Chavo Guerrero.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
And they wanted to do, they had a great idea for a finisher, and they couldn't, it just wouldn't work. Kidman and Guerrero kept trying to set up in the corner for a top rope gory bomb. And the first time, I think they both ended up falling on their faces. Chavo got up, looked at the handheld, pointed at him going, one more time, grabbed Kidman, and they went up and tried it again.
Didn't work.
And it still didn't work. So they went with a standard finish, standard gory bomb, finished the match, and got out of Dodge. The match never aired because of that.
I think we can be thankful for that.
The one more time thing would have been edited out because, I mean, we've seen other do-overs. The same night as the Undertaker and Paul Bearer thing I mentioned, Booker T had this really long match with Bob Holly. And apparently they didn't get the shot they wanted. So they had a couple other things happen, and then Bob Holly came out and demanded a rematch. And Booker came out, and they went for like 2 minutes and did the exact same finish. Clever. There was a SmackDown where Palumbo was supposed to fight Kenny Dykstra. And they had to edit this because the first time Dykstra and Victoria come out, Chuck Palumbo's music plays, but he never came out. Victoria grabs the microphone, and she and Dykstra cut a promo on Chuck Palumbo saying he's too scared to come out. He probably flooded his bike backstage. So they went to the back. They did something else. The two of them came out. Then Palumbo comes out. The promo did not air. So they try to be creative with it. If they can with a do-over, but sometimes, you know, in the case of Chavo and Kidman, that was just awful. In the case of Booker and Bob Holly, that was cool. Victoria and Kenny Dykstra at least knew how to cover it. Stuff like that.
Well, anyway.
By the way, I have to say this about the Victoria Dykstra thing. They kind of, if they would have stuck together for like about 5-6 more months, they could have gotten over as like a cougar, young stud date thing.
Okay.
Because Victoria is now, what, pushing 38,
39? Yeah, but she's already figured out what she's doing when she retires.
Body shop.
I've been there.
You know what? She's a very smart businesswoman. I met her at a book signing at Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
And I
met her with my semi-good friend Lillian Garcia. She and I,
cool.
Yeah, oh yeah. She lives in New York, of course. And my friend Joe Melillo and I, we met her. This is a great story. This is a fantastic story. Game 7 of the 2001 World Series. Okay.
Okay.
This is November 1st, 2001, right after September 11th.
Uh-huh.
And Lillian is performing in a little club called the Bitter End in New York City, one of the most famous clubs in New York City. And she's performing with a band called Dog Voices. So my friend and I are like...
Wait a minute. What was the name of the band again?
Dog Voices.
Oh. I thought you said Fall Out Boy for a second.
No. Anyway. So what happens is we're like, okay, we're not going to be fanboys. We're not going to, you know, we're going to play this cool. We're going to play this really cool. So in the back comes in Molly Holly and Nora Greenwald and Ivory, Lisa Moretti. Okay.
Yay. Okay.
Oh, by the way, we're a wild, wild woman, by the way. Really, really nice.
She is.
One of the nicest people you could ever want to meet. So we're like, we're going to buy him drinks. And my friend nearly slapped. He's like, you're not going to buy them drinks. You're not going to be fanboy. Just shut the F up, right? So we're listening to Lillian's thing, and she's doing some of her original stuff, and she's like saying, anybody see you on Raw? And they were like, you know, anybody wrestling friends? And my friend Joe goes, yes, I admit it. And he goes, oh, that's okay. It pays the bills. And she's, you know, really charismatic. So we're really dancing, and then, believe it or not, Molly and Lisa buy drinks for us. True story. Okay, true story. And we actually go out drinking with them afterwards. And Lisa Moretti was pounding back shots of Absolute Citron, by the way, and she could pound them down with the best of them.
2001 was a fine year for you, Jason.
Yeah, 2001 was a very good year. So we started bringing signs to the arena because Lillian knows us as the Bitter End Boys. The Bitter End. And every time we bring a sign, she recognizes it. And she comes to us and she knows us. She knows us very well. And we're not like, you know, fanboys and things like that. We actually know them. So getting back to the thing, we met Victoria at a book signing. Really nice lady, really cool, and from what I've been reading, a really smart businesswoman as well.
She is an absolute sweetheart. I got to watch her at the Black Widow Customs opening in Louisville.
Okay.
I managed to get the time to get down there to see the festivities. I laughed so hard watching her running around like the proverbial headless chicken because she was trying to oversee everything and still be a good hostess.
Right, exactly.
And she brought in a bunch of guys from SmackDown to do autograph signings, and that actually drew a few other names. Al Snow and Dean Hill. Dean Hill is one of the co-hosts for the OVW TV program.
Okay.
They showed up with their custom rides and signed autographs and talked to people. Kenny Bolin, a manager and a good friend of Cornette's, came
right by.
He brought up an OVW guy named JD Michaels, who is doing a bite-off Shawn Michaels gimmick, but it's cool. I finally got to meet a wrestler that I was chasing around OVW for a time, Idol Stevens, who was horribly, horribly misused on SmackDown.
Nikki, remind me sometime down the road to write up that induction.
Oh, Teacher's Pets?
Yep.
Yeah. I finally got to meet him. I managed to stick around long enough that we didn't necessarily close the place down, but I sat and talked with Bolin and JD and a couple other people through most of the evening. I managed to stay in the store when they started kicking people out, when they did some final pictures where they got all the wrestlers inside and took a couple shots. I headed out the door, and I saw her kind of jog past me, and I said, Victoria, thank you for putting up with our nonsense. And she says, why are you still here? Will you go home? The session ended an hour ago. Will you go home already?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that most wrestlers, and again, working in the indies and working with some young people, God, I'm so old, you know, 40, you know, young people, right? You know, young guys, and you see these guys, and most of these guys are very, very, very down-to-earth, nice people. I've met some idiots. I've met some a-holes. I really have. But most of them are nice. You know,
and in some cases with the guys, especially at the WWE level, you're going to run into there's always one guy that you just ran into the absolute wrong day.
Right, exactly.
Wasn't that day Jillian?
At the Black Widow custom signing, it was Jillian.
Jillian Hall?
Jillian Hall was very quiet, very standoffish. She did not want to be there, and I don't know why.
Well, I absolutely love Jillian's gimmick, by the way. I think it's fantastic.
I kind of dug on her when I ran into her in Louisville back in March about her duet with Daivari, which is still my all-time favorite.
Okay.
Not only because I was there, but the fact that they did Grease.
Uh-huh.
But I'll give you the perfect example. Did you ever get to meet or talk to Rico?
No.
Okay. I actually had somebody tell me that Rico was an ass, and I was like, "You are so full of crap. How many times have you met Rico?" And he said, "Once." And I don't want to meet him anymore. With one exception, Rico was practically Tommy Dreamer levels of nice guy when it came to the fans. He came out at a show, and one of the few times I was in New York, I went to Buffalo for a Raw show, and Rico came out, signed, took pictures, got on the other side of the fence, that big back parking lot, got around the iron fence, and was taking pictures with people on the sidewalk. And he turned to everybody and says, "Did I get everybody? Did everybody get their autographs? Did everybody get their pictures?" I've never seen anybody else do that before or since.
Well, you know, I mean, look, you're dealing with a lot of people. I mean, and also a lot of different things. I mean, you have ring rats, and believe me, I've seen them, even in the independent circuit, God help us.
No.
They exist. I know exactly the ones you're talking about. There's a very notorious one in my region.
Okay.
I won't go into.
No, neither will I. Let's just say I had the unfortunate thing of being proposed to, you know, the indecent proposal sort of deal, and I'm just like, no, 1,000 times no, you know. And, you know, you have the ring rats, you have the wrestlers. It's a whole different ballgame when you're also the announcer, because when you're the announcer, you're sort of the wizard behind the curtain sort of
right.
deal. And I love doing that. I don't get to do it as often as I like to, but I love doing it because you're in control and you get pushed around a little bit. I mean, nothing really bad and things like that. And I have a couple pictures to prove it. And I've been beat up by managers, so to speak. And it's fun. This is a business that you got to have a passion for. And this is what this week did. This week really brought back the passion to a lot of what we saw. You know,
I'll agree with you because I have been lambasting my board for everybody crapping on WWE week in, week out, month in and month out. And I said, if you guys hate it so much, why the hell are you still watching?
And their answer is? And I think I know what you're saying. Can I say it? Because I haven't had much to talk about over the past 20 minutes.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Seidelman. Go ahead.
And I think the answer to go for is, what they're going for is, well, we don't want to miss any of the good stuff. If anything special happens, we don't want to miss it.
That's what YouTube and torrents are for. And frankly, if I was as set up as some of these guys, I wouldn't be watching wrestling at all. And this week, I would have wept if I'd missed it. But you know what? It's just, you know, if something has been that bad for that long to you, you're the stupid dog on the front porch sleeping on the rusty nail. Move.
Let me tell you something. There have been times when I've actually not watched the shows because of booking decisions. For example, when they had Hogan beat Triple H for the championship a few years
mm-hmm.
back,
yeah.
I did not watch WWE product. Okay?
Right.
I did not watch it. After, and you might tell me I'm an asshole for this, but after Benoit died, it took me about 6 months to get back into it.
No, that's
that one I'm not blaming you for.
No, I can understand that.
Because honestly, I didn't think WWE was taking the right tone with it, to be honest.
They still aren't in some levels.
Can I be honest with both of you?
Sure.
I was unfazed, mainly for two reasons.
Unfazed? Are you out of your mind?
No,
let him talk.
Okay.
Let me finish. One, I was away that week. And Nikki knows this because we were still doing, I think we were just starting up the radio shows back then.
Right.
With Tyler Brown.
Right.
And I immediately stated on next week's show, I was unfazed because mainly I was not there. I did not watch Raw, I did not watch ECW, and I sure as hell didn't watch SmackDown. I was in Seattle. I was with a great lady friend, and I'm still a great friend with her to this date, Jamie. And when we saw this, we saw the Benoit tragedy, you know, when it was a tragedy, quote unquote, on CNN. I looked at this, oh wow, and I move on. So aside from that moment, I was like, didn't matter to me. It was when I found out what they were going to do with this past footage. Now, I watched WWE 24/7 religiously. They were airing, they just got around to they were airing recent pay-per-views. They were doing WrestleMania 23. It was a pay-per-view that I liked. I was going to put to tape. They had Super Bowl 3, another pay-per-view I was going to put to tape. And the biggest kick in the balls was the Monday Night War. Because they were starting to get to the point where they were going to revisit the Benoit Sullivan feud.
Right.
And during this time, Woman was with Sullivan, then Benoit took her from Sullivan. As soon as he died and it was found out that it was a double murder homicide, double murder suicide, footage pulled. Month later, called Comcast, told him, I don't want the channel anymore.
I respect your decision back then. But I still think that the WWE is absolutely 100% right in exercising the footage. Hold on. Okay.
I disagree.
I would say this. They could continue this until this is all blown over completely, and they're getting to that point where it's blowing over completely because they found a new scapegoat. In Hogan and his problems. Nobody's caring about Benoit and the steroids thing anymore. The steroids thing has just moved completely to Barry Bonds. And the wrestling scapegoat now is Hogan. I envision, and me and Nikki talked about this a few months ago, start to slowly bring back the footage now since it's a year after the fact.
Wrong. Sorry, it's never going to happen. Never. Benoit is about as untouchable as O.J. Simpson is. And look, I understand where you two guys are coming from. I'm not trying to necessarily disagree with your opinion from that way. I'm looking at it from WWE's point of view. WWE, and I know you guys can, but the general public cannot separate the guy from the murderer, the wrestler from the murderer here. And when you have, put it to you this way, when you see the Naked Gun movies and you see O.J. Simpson getting rolled over and things like that, you see the guy who killed Ronald Goldman and his wife instead of the guy who was the comedic actor.
Right.
It's what you see. It's the perception of, okay? I understand where you guys are coming from, but there is no way WWE, even 5 years down the line, and if they do it 5 years down the line, I'll be very surprised, they bring footage back. Sorry, it's just not going to happen.
They can't ignore history, though, is my problem. I understand that this is still a PR fiasco on several levels, but they cannot ignore the history and the ability and the man that was. Granted, he destroyed his legacy in one weekend and hung himself for it. But you cannot ignore what he was for this business. WWE has it partially right. Do not advertise him. I'm sure that if I found a copy of the Backlash 2004 DVD right now, that match will still be on the end, but Benoit's face ain't going to be on the cover. You cannot take away what he did for this business. Just like
as
NFL Films cannot cut O.J. Simpson out of the record books. WWE wants to completely erase Benoit. You can't do that.
I would. I'll say this, Nikki. The recent anthologies that come out with Benoit, you know, wrestling the WrestleMania matches, wrestling actually the new SummerSlam anthology that just came out or is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit will be in those, but he will. But like as you said, will not be advertised. His footage will still be there, but just won't be advertised. And I know Jason,
yeah,
you'll probably disagree, but if you're going to allow people that right, that would probably be the best way to go. Just don't advertise him. Don't even mention him. Don't even put his picture up on there.
I'm with you on that. As I said, I have no problems with complete matches. I mean, I have Hard Knocks, the Chris Benoit story. I also have the Ladder Match DVD set, which is an excellent set, by the way, if you don't have that particular one. Do you have that one?
I do, and I've watched it cover to cover.
It's great stuff. Also, the Steve Austin one is very good, too. But getting back, you know, I understand the ignoring of history. It's just one of those double-edged swords right now. I think Hogan's the pariah for the moment, but put it to you this way. If Triple H or John Cena fails a drug test, it all comes back. You know it comes
back. It'll all come back on their heads. Benoit's name might come up, but it's all going to come down on their heads, and then they're going to start pointing at the current guys.
I don't think
Benoit's name is going to come up that huge.
I know it will come up